This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. For a long time, being single or unmarried carried the taint of nonconformity to the expectations of society. Well, no more, or at least it's no longer true numerically. According to the American Community Survey released this month by the Census Bureau, unmarried people are now the majority in the United States. The survey found that in 2005, 49.7% of the 111.1 million households were made up of married couples. That's down from 52% 5 years earlier, down from 56% in 1990, and down from 84% in 1930. So what does this say about American marriage? Is it an anachronism? Is it something that needs to be saved? Is it just that people are getting married later, or is it that more people who were married are choosing not to stay married? And what do our attitudes toward marriage say about ourselves and society? Later in the program, we'll call Star City in Russia to talk with the first female space tourist about what her trip was like and whether it was worth the money. But first, the unmarried majority. Is marriage as important to you as it was to your parents, and why? Join the conversation. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is talk@npr.org. And we begin with Stephanie Kuntz, the author of Marriage, A History, How Love Conquered Marriage, and a professor of history and family studies at the Evergreen State College in Olympia, Washington. She joins us today from Denver University, where she's doing a visiting fellowship, and it's nice to have you on the program.
Thank you.
What does this milestone mean, do you think?
Well, I think it's just one more nail into an edifice that's being built for a long time, and that is that we are becoming a society where marriage is valued in some ways even more than it used to be when it was more mandatory. But it's more optional. People are taking in the attitude that marriage was once the thing you did almost as soon as you got out of school. It was the way you began adulthood. It was the way you began your life of settling down. Today, marriage is something that most people do after they've established their education and their job career. It's something you do when you actually are prepared and feel like you're already an adult. And that's a huge change. It means that, as you say, many more people are living longer periods of their life outside marriage, even if they eventually divorce. On average, Americans spend half their adult life outside marriage. Most of them still marry, but we have to deal with the fact that a lot of obligations and commitments and actions are taking place outside marriage.
It has been written, I've read this description, that in past years, in the old days, marriage was about having sex, and more these days, it's about having children.
Well, I think that's really true, too. But also, you know, marriage in the old days was about something you had to do for social respectability. For women, you know, we think about women as the romantic sex, but actually, for thousands of years, right up until the late 1960s, women said on a college poll in 1967 that they would consider marrying a man they didn't love if he met their other economic criteria. Today, with men and women economically and equal, economically and legally more equal than ever before, people enter marriage in a different way for different reasons. And now we expect more of marriage, I think, than previous generations ever did.
Of course, the statistics might look a little bit different if gay and lesbian couples were allowed to marry.
Yes, that's the one element of the population that is demanding entry into marriage, a fact that some people perversely claim is an attack on the institution. But one of the reasons that they are saying marriage should apply to us is because heterosexuals have changed the definition of marriage, and they've made it less about having kids and less about property and economic security and more about intimacy and love and fairness and flexible roles.
And what does this mean for the unmarried? I mean, certainly it's been a long time since anyone looked askance at an unmarried woman.
Well, I think that what we're seeing here is a real expansion of options for many people, that it's more possible to remain single without being called, as they used to be in the past, deviant, immoral, neurotic, sick. But it also means that when people do decide to get married, they have to do marriage differently than they did when people entered it as youngsters just beginning their way in life. You know, I think that marriage now requires much more negotiation skills when you do get into it because people are coming to it with more life experience under their belt.
And a little bit more set in their ways, perhaps, than they might have been in previous years.
perhaps that doesn't seem to be a problem. Marriages contracted at an older age are not at higher risk for divorce, but they do require those negotiating skills.
Let's get some callers in on this conversation. Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk at npr.org. We'll begin with Douglas, and Douglas is calling us from Memphis.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, you're on the air. Douglas, go ahead, please.
Hi, I was wondering if you could have some discussion on possibly the disparities between developing countries and non-developing countries. I think the common knowledge is that as a country gets more developed, people wait longer to marry, and I wonder if this could be some sort of trend that has to do with economics, that they're actually not getting married instead of just waiting longer to get married. Mm-hmm. And I'll listen to your comments off the air. Thank you.
And Douglas, I think part of the answer to this question is I think people also have fewer children. But Stephanie Kuntz, do you have any information about that?
Well, yes, and a lot of this is driven by the changes in women's roles. For both men and women, we need higher education more than we used to, so both men and women are postponing marriage longer. But women in particular are now finding that there are other routes to economic security other than marrying a man, and in some ways more secure ones given the prevalence of divorce. So women are much more insistent upon establishing themselves on average in the workforce than they used to be. So the delays in marriage are continuing in most industrial countries, as your caller said. But there's one interesting irony. In countries such as Japan or Italy, where gender roles have changed less, actually, marriage rates are lower and the age of marriage is higher than it here is here in the United States. It's as though in those countries we haven't changed enough to convince women that marriage is a good deal.
Let's hear from April. April's calling us from Phoenix, Arizona.
Hi.
Hi, April.
It's a pleasure to be on the show. Thanks for taking my call. I was just calling in because I am a 25-year-old medical student out here in Phoenix, and I was taught from a young age that you shouldn't marry until after you've established your career. Now, that's not to say I don't have a relationship. I've had the same boyfriend for the last 8 years, and we've been living together for the last year and a half.
And establishing a career in the medical profession, you should pay off your loans sometime next century.
With any luck, yes, sir.
Yeah. And I guess, Stephanie Kuntz, April's situation is more and more common.
Very common. That's exactly what people are doing nowadays. And it's really important to understand that despite all the doomsaying, you know, it used to be true that women who put off marriage to establish their careers and get higher education had less chance of marrying. But now, in fact, college-educated women and career women have more chance at marrying, and their marriages are more stable of women who marry at much younger ages or without that education and work experience.
April, let me ask you, what difference would it make if you were actually married to your boyfriend of 8 years?
You know, I've actually asked myself that question a lot, and I'm not sure there is a great deal of difference. I mean, socially, we're presenting to our community as a couple. I mean, whether a piece of paper in a ceremony changes that or not is really a matter for spirituality. It's a matter for culture. It's not a matter for functionality.
Good luck with your studies.
Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye. Let's invite Amy Dickinson, our friend, to join this conversation. She writes the syndicated column Ask Amy for the Chicago Tribune and has heard from many marrieds and unmarrieds and people on their way into and out of both of those statuses. And she joins us now from our bureau in Chicago. And Amy, always nice to have you on the program.
Hi, Neil. Listen, I think of myself as a divorcee or, better yet, a spinster.
A spinster?
A spinster. Although I have been married, but I think that your spinsterhood grows back after a certain point. So, yeah, I think I'm a spinster.
Is that what you put on the IRS form?
Yeah. Yes.
Well, I asked Stephanie, but I wanted to ask you, too. What do you think this unmarried majority means?
Well, I think that actually, and Stephanie reflected a lot of this, you know, marriage for me still, as cynical as I've become, it's really the primary motive is it's a covenant. And why else would you agree to take on somebody else's debt? You know, mm-hmm. I mean, we're not only, you know, one economic reason not to get married is that you take a person's debt, and it can be pretty hard to shake that debt if the relationship breaks up. So I think that this means, yeah, as Stephanie said, we're moving forward. We're transitioning into this new era where people are able to imagine a lot of alternatives to marriage.
And is this what you're hearing from your readers? Is they regard marriage as obviously something very special?
Yes, although by the time they write to me, not so much.
Well, some of them are having some difficulties.
And you know, Neil, the some of the most touching letters I've gotten in the last 3 years are about very young couples who have gotten married very, very quickly because one or the other of the partners has been deployed in the military. And they're getting married for lots of reasons. One very significant reason is because of death benefits. Hmm. And, you know, they write to me wondering if it's okay to get married very quickly and have a ceremony later. So people get married for lots of different reasons. They still do. And, you know, people still believe in love. They do.
Yet, why do you think this is happening? Why do you think that we have now a majority unmarried nation?
I would love to hear from men. If any men out there could call in and give us the male side of it, I think that for women, we can well imagine really satisfying a lot of our life goals without necessarily getting married. You know, my dream now, I have a child, I've raised a child by myself. My dream now is to meet a guy, go to the movies, maybe he lives in an apartment nearby, not necessarily with. And I think a lot of women, we can imagine these alternative ways of living and having relationships and romances and children and our careers as well.
Well, we're going to have to take a short break. When we come back, we can get to the calls that we have on the screen from Julie, Shannon, Karen, and Ed. So we will get at least one male on the program. We're also going to be hearing from Steve Waters, a director of Young Adults in Marriage, for Focus on the Family, to see what this group thinks about the new statistics, which show that for the first time in history, America is a majority unmarried nation. If you'd like to join the conversation, our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. We'll be back after the break. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. According to numbers from the U.S. Census Bureau, this is the first time ever that married couples are a minority in America. Of course, that varies regionally. Manhattan Island in New York City is the most unmarried county in the country, the most married county in Utah. We're talking about what that means, about our attitudes on marriage and society, and what's driving the change. Our guests are Stephanie Kuntz, author of Marriage, A History, How Love Conquered Marriage, and National Chair of the Council on Contemporary Families, and Amy Dickinson, our friend who writes the syndicated column Ask Amy for the Chicago Tribune. Of course, we welcome your participation in this conversation. Is marriage important to you? Are our perceptions of marriage changing? 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. And, well, all right, let's not be too discriminatory, and let's get Ed on the line. Ed's calling us from Portland, Oregon.
Hello there. I guess my main comment is on what I see as the state of marriage. In my family's case, my dad is one of eight good Catholic kids, and his mom essentially chose to approve or disapprove of all of his brothers and sisters' marriages.
Mm-hmm.
My dad is the only one that she disapproved of, to the point that I only saw my grandmother about five times growing up because she refused to see us, basically. And yet my dad is the only one of his siblings still on his first marriage. So to me, it just kind of shows that when marriage is truly because the people want to be together, it seems to last longer than the marriage that was the kind of old-fashioned, you're going to be married because it's expected of you marriage.
I wonder, Stephanie Kuntz, do you see evidence of that?
Well, I think that it's a mixed bag. I think that, yes, that people who choose each other, who love each other, and are mature enough to change and negotiate through the years have a better chance nowadays than an arranged marriage. I think what we have is a tremendous paradox. The fact that marriage has become more optional And it means that when a marriage works, it works better than ever before. But it also means that people will not rush into a marriage if they're not sure. They won't stay in a marriage. It seems less bearable to stay in a marriage that doesn't live up to that potential. So I think that, yeah, most people want to get married. A good marriage is a great thing. But more people, we're going to have to recognize that marriage is no longer the only way that people come to maturity, where people take on obligations, and somehow we have to think widely enough to both support good marriages and support people who are single for whatever reason.
Amy, what do you think?
Well, you know, Neil, what I tell people in my column is that I wish they would wait longer to get married. It'd be more thoughtful, prayerful, whatever, and more, you know, negotiate more ahead of time. And I urge people to hesitate before leaving a marriage. It seems to me, it's like Stephanie said, that people are, for instance, infidelity, that's considered not, you know, that's like a make or break scenario. And yet, I know of many successful marriages that have survived infidelity, and strong marriages can survive infidelity. But anymore, it seems that people are, they're too eager to walk away once they become married.
Ed, thanks very much for the call. And we wish your father continued good luck with his marriage.
Yes, indeed.
Let's bring another voice into the conversation. Steve Waters is director of Young Adults in Marriage for Focus on the Family. He joins us from their studios in Colorado Springs, Colorado. And nice to have you on the program today.
Hey, thanks, Neil. Great to join.
And as you look at these numbers, obviously this is a trend that has continued on for some time. I guess it's just arbitrary at which moment it tipped one way or the other. What do they mean to you?
Well, I think what I'm starting to see here is the shrinking of the time that people are married. You look at the bookends in terms of their single life before marriage and their single life after marriage, whether through divorce or death of a spouse, and you see the period in between is shrinking. So over the course of life, at least 80% or so of the general population ends up married. But mm-hmm. now what we're seeing is a snapshot that shows how few are married right now. And I think what that's telling us is that people are spending much more of their life getting used to being single. And I think that's the interesting trend.
Yeah, Stephanie Kuntz did tell us the majority of Americans still do get married at some point, but may not be married right now. Obviously, in some cultures, it's considered immoral not to be married, especially for women. That doesn't seem to be the case here anymore.
Well, I know. It's interesting. You were talking about, or I believe it was Stephanie was talking about, the things we get used to, the you know, that it's not an obligation to marry or whatever. I think the biggest change here is that people still desire the benefits of marriage, even though they're maybe more cautious about the responsibilities and risk associated with it. I think what's changing culturally is how many benefits of marriage we are more comfortable seeing people enjoy outside of the responsibilities of marriage.
Mm-hmm. Let's get another caller in on the conversation, and this is Shannon. Shannon's calling us from Charleston, South Carolina.
Hello, I love your show.
Thank you.
You know, I beg to differ. If you're married once, you're not a spinster, darling. I am a spinster. I have never been married.
Okay, Amy, you sit corrected.
Well, I did say that your spinsterhood grows back. That was my point.
Oh, is that like a hymen?
Yeah, well, I don't know. Can we do that on the radio?
I think we just did, but certainly not the operation in any case. But Shannon, go ahead.
Actually, you know, I always thought that I would get married and buy a house and live happily ever after. And then, you know, interest rates went down and the prices of homes here in Charleston are affordable. So I just bought a house and decided not to get married. And you know what's funny? As soon as I bought a house, oh, my God, I'm like the hottest thing on the market right now.
Can I add something? This is quite typical. 40% of home buyers now are single women. So a lot of decisions, economic ones and emotional ones, are being taken outside of marriage or at least before marriage.
Well, do you remember when they used to say that if you were over 33, a woman stood a better chance of getting hit by lightning twice before they were able to get married?
Statistics that were later debunked, the same thing as that spinsterhood thing.
Yes. Yeah, well, it's storming here in Charleston today, so maybe I'll get lucky.
Okay, Shannon. Thanks very much for the call. But Steve Waters, let me ask you, obviously economic conditions for women have changed dramatically over the past, 60 years?
Right. Well, and I think what you're seeing are the practical reasons that people used to get married have changed. And so it is leaving more people in a position where, like Stephanie was saying, they are holding out for love and for strong companionship. I think the concern there might be, though, that their expectations are getting even higher. So they're less practical about the marriage, and then they go in expecting an overwhelming level of intimacy and, you know, the strong soulmate companion, which I think can also be difficult because who can live up to those expectations? Mm.
The Bush administration has been promoting a pro-marriage initiative. Do you think it's the government should play a role in the promotion of marriage?
Yeah, I think what we're seeing in those particular programs, especially in the urban areas, is that they're coming in with more information about the relationships people are already in, because once again, most people aren't shunning marriage. They're tapping into the benefits in the relationships they're in. But I think they're beginning to bring more education about what responsibilities go with a good marriage and how the security and strength of marriage makes a difference. I think, you know, as I was hearing some of the other comments, I think what's missing here is a long-term view of for better or worse, for richer, for poor, sick and in health and all that, because a lot of these relationships, especially cohabitation, while they're in the prime of their life, it's easy to feel like marriage is optional. Mm. And later in life, maybe in their 50s, 60s, and beginning to face reverses in life, that's when it's nice to fall back on a commitment, or as Amy mentioned, a covenant. And I think that's one of the biggest benefits long-term is a security that can come with someone who's actually taken on that covenant.
I can understand what you're saying, but is it government's responsibility to be promoting this? What's government's interest in this?
Well, I think the government saw an opportunity because, especially when it comes to the welfare of children, it makes a difference whether or not the man who's in that home is married to that woman. And a lot of times there is potential for the relationship that a lot of kids are seeing the man and the woman in their home have. If it's actually under the guise of a committed marriage relationship, there's more health, there's more wealth, and often more happiness. And so I think that there is a factor, especially for the kids.
Can I make a comment here?
Go ahead, Stephanie.
You know, I certainly agree that a good marriage is a great thing. It's good for the adults and the kids involved. But I do think that there's a little wishful thinking involved in some of the marriage promotion activities. For one thing, you have to be very careful to have that adjective good. People are not happier and healthier in bad marriages, and kids are not better off in bad marriages. Secondly, even if we take that into account, the reality of the matter is that people are taking on obligations outside of marriage. They are spending more of their life outside of marriage. And I think that we have to work on promoting healthy relationships in and out of marriage. If people want to get married, fine. If they don't, and a lot of them don't, and some have good reasons not to, we should be helping unmarried people meet their obligations. We should be helping divorced people do divorce better. So I do get a little worried when the government goes in and just takes one particular aspect that, oh my goodness, you know, marriage is the answer to this.
Hmm. All right, let's see if we can get another caller on the line. And this will be Julie. Julie's calling us from San Mateo in California.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
This is a wonderful show.
Thanks.
I'm 38 years old and now pursuing an education, which when I was younger, didn't think I could pursue. And there was a very wonderful man who I knew was 9 years my senior. I'm sure he would have had a wonderful time, but he ended up marrying someone else. And I, in the meantime, have gone through a lot of personal growth, and I kind of feel that marriage is more a case-by-case basis. I don't think it's for everyone. The same as with having children. I think that's kind of like a privilege, not a right. And I figure I'm not against marriage. I mean, I do know a lot of people who have been divorced and such. But I think that if I meet someone and we go through, you know, the period of learning about each other and seeing how we can work together, and then maybe I would get married. But I think right now I'm really enjoying the fact that I have the opportunity to pursue higher education.
Mm-hmm. Amy Dickinson, it seems that a lot of people enjoy having options.
Yes, and, you know, we do want it all, and I think that this can be a problem. I ran a little dialogue in my column recently. It started with a letter from a woman who had been with a man, living with him for a long time, and he got sick, and she wanted to leave. Now, I'm not saying that married couples don't go through this where one gets sick and the other betrays them and leaves or whatever, but it seemed to me that what came up in my column was there is some undefinable commitment about being married. Some of it's on paper, some of it's kind of spiritual. I don't think this woman would have found it so easy to leave an ill partner if they were married.
We are talking with Amy Dickinson, who you just heard. She writes the syndicated column Ask Amy for the Chicago Tribune, with Stephanie Kuntz, author of Marriage, A History, How Love Conquered Marriage, and with Steve Waters, director of Young Adults in Marriage for Focus on the Family. You're listening to Talk of the Nation, which is coming to you from NPR News. And here's an email question from Lexi in Columbus, Ohio. How is the fact that people are getting married later in life affecting things like unmarried couples getting loans for homes and cars together and other financial matters? What about health insurance? Stephanie Kuntz?
Well, that is one of the real challenges we face as this happens. Fortunately, it is now possible, as it wasn't in the 50s and 60s, for unmarried people to get loans and promotions. But, for example, America, more than most other Western countries, channels many benefits through marriage. And the fact that people are delaying marriage, taking more time to get established in their careers and fewer of their careers at the early ages offer health insurance is a real problem. You know, do you want your 20, I have a 26-year-old kid who's decided to go back and become, take classes to become a doctor. So he has no insurance. Shall I tell him to get married to get insurance? We have to deal with the fact that this extension of time that people are outside of marriage, we have to rethink some of the social policies we have that we have so formally regulated through marriage. We have to rethink things like sexual obligations. You know, no society in history has ever kept the 18 to 28-year-old section of the population celibate, so stay abstinent till marriage doesn't seem a very realistic prescription anymore. There's lots of things. There are more options, and many of them are good options, but there are lots of things we need to rethink here.
Steve Waters, particularly in those financial arrangements, that's something that government could, and some people say should, address.
Yeah, I'm not sure I understand where you're coming from, but I think as far as, once again, the concept of connecting responsibilities and benefits, that with marriage, those benefits do have tight levels of responsibility. So I think any other arrangements that we find other ways to extend benefits, it's not always clear what the responsibilities are going to go with those beyond, whatever contract is signed by the financial parties involved. I think there are cultural expectations of marriage that people feel, that they need to live up to, especially men. We've seen research that shows that men feel that expectation, and there's something that comes with how a man changes when he takes on the commitment of marriage so often.
Let's get Marie on the line, and Marie's calling us from Salisbury in Maryland.
Good afternoon.
And
talking about benefits of marriage, my husband and I have been happily married for 20 years now, or over 20 years now. But way back when, he worked for an airline, and we had lived together for years before this, and we wanted to take a trip to Europe, and the flight benefits were for employees and spouses, not employees and live-in girlfriends. And, our motivation for getting married at that point was, oh, why not? Let's go take a vacation. my point is that it didn't change our commitment to each other. It didn't change our feelings toward each other. And, it's obviously been 20 years, but it was a heck of a motivator.
Yet, I'm curious about the idea of getting married for a trip to Europe, but you, I'm sure, introduce each other now as husband and wife and not as boyfriend and girlfriend. And there is a difference in that terminology, isn't there, Marie?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Mm-hmm. I mean, when we were living together, and again, this was 20 years ago, some people really frowned on cohabitation. I can remember trying to rent an apartment, and we had to say, oh, we were roommates.
Roommates.
Two-bedroom apartment, because you weren't allowed to rent to people living together.
Marie, thanks very much, and continued good luck in your marriage.
Thank you.
And Steve Waters, I wanted to thank you for your time today.
Hey, thank you.
Steve Waters, director of Young Adults in Marriage for Focus on the Family. He joined us from the studios at Focus on the Family in Colorado Springs, Colorado. Stephanie Kuntz, appreciate you being with us on the program today.
Oh, my pleasure.
Stephanie Kuntz is the author of Marriage, A History, How Love Conquered Marriage, and she was with us on the phone from Denver University, where she's at a visiting fellowship. Amy, you stay right there. We got a couple more questions for you, and when we come back from the break, we're going to be talking with the world's first female space tourist as well, so stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. We're wrapping up our conversation about the unmarried majority. Amy Dickinson is still with us. She writes the syndicated column Ask Amy for the Chicago Tribune. And let's see if we can get a couple more callers on the line. This is Ravi. Ravi calling us from Tucson, Arizona.
Yes, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
And I have a point to make. You know, right now there are more women graduating college than men, so there are more successful women, I guess, in professional career. And I'm married to a professional woman. She's more successful than me. And a lot of my friends, especially in the red-blooded males, they have a problem with women more successful than men in a relationship.
Boy, I see this a lot in my column. I think of this as a really big tension point in our culture where, you know, we've kind of made this big leap and yet a lot of our expectations still have to catch up. I mean, when you're in your 30s and dating somebody seriously, do you call that man your boyfriend? That doesn't seem right. And if you, as a woman, make more money than he does, who picks up the check? You know, these are really, really basic questions. And we enter into these relationships with a lot of assumptions and expectations, and they sort of have to change.
Ravi, do you think that's right?
Actually, my wife makes a lot more money than me. She's a physician. I have no problem with that. And a lot of my friends who are single, and some of them actually said that they actually would have a problem with this. And a lot of my wife's friends who are physicians and other successful women, they're single because they cannot find a compatible spouse.
Well,
it's kind of interesting.
Interesting point, Ravi. Thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
All right, let's talk with Mike. Mike's calling us from St. Louis.
Hi, Neil.
Hi.
I think that not being married, particularly after the first marriage or after a divorce, provides a couple with constant responsibility to maintain the relationship.
Hmm.
And whereas a marriage recreates or allows to be recreated in one or the other's mind the fantasy that was broken by the divorce, just like the suburban house with a white picket fence. Marriage, I think, is a little bit of and especially in our culture, a little bit of a fantasy, and it's really hard to live up to. And if you're not married, you constantly have to maintain the tension, the responsibility to that relationship, and I think that's probably healthy. I don't know.
Well, Amy, it seems to me it's hard to find something, anything in American society that isn't part of somebody's fantasy. But
right, and I think that's why a lot of people do get married, honestly, because of the fantasy.
The Ozzie and Harriet fantasy is one of them.
Yes, and also the fantasy of a certain type of wedding. In my column, I tell people, if you want to have a party, have a party. Don't get married unless you're ready.
Well, you can't get that seven-layer cake. Well, maybe you could.
You can, yeah.
Yeah, I suppose. Mike, thanks very much for the call.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. And let's see if we can get Maggie on the line. Maggie's been very patient with us, hanging on the line from Toronto in Canada.
Actually, driving back to Toronto on the New York State Thruway, what a fun drive.
Oh, especially on such a gorgeous day.
Beautiful, the rain. It's so funny because I'm bouncing off the inside of the car here. So much to say. As a gay woman who is an expatriated American living in Canada, the second they changed the law, I married my partner of 8 years because I could. And just three quick points. One, absolutely, as your panelist said, it felt differently. There was some kind of weird shift I never thought I'd feel. I couldn't have been more committed to that relationship, yet somehow that legal paper made it different. Secondly, as an ex-lawyer and a divorce lawyer, having done so much gay divorce work, a lot of people did absolutely sit there and say, well, I'm not married. I can walk away. Oddly, gay couples. And finally, that woman who got married after 20 years just for the trip, things have evolved. She wouldn't have to do that now because there are so many domestic partnership laws, certainly with airlines, for obvious reasons. So it's so interesting that you have this discussion, and the people who want to get married that might actually up the numbers can't in the United States in so many places.
Amy Dickinson, that's certainly the case in many places, I think everywhere but Massachusetts at the moment. And this is something, but I'm interested to get back to Maggie's point about that something that changes when vows are exchanged.
And, you know, I agree. I completely agree. And I can't, who can even describe it, what that feels like? Mainly, it feels really, really, really great. It's a really spiritual thing, and it's very beautiful. And like I said, it's a covenant. And you know what? If I meet a guy who has that covenant going on, I'm in.
Maggie, thanks very much for the call. Drive carefully, if you will.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for your time.
Bye-bye. And Amy Dickinson, as always, thank you for your time as well.
Thank you, Neil.
Amy Dickinson writes the Ask Amy column, which is syndicated by the Chicago Tribune, and she joined us today from our bureau in New York. When we come back, we'll call to Russia to find out what it's like in space.